Blog Talk Radio.
Jean-Luc, Geordi Specs, mysteries on the holodecks, asteroids, triple droids, telepathic betazoids, transporter, deadly claw, visitor from L.A. Law, photons, no Kirk, captain has gone berserk, shuttlecraft, Council Troy, Dr. Crusher's little boy, Klingon rights, parasites, new heights, phaser fights, Data's head, Tasha's dead, Riker's hanging by a thread, celebration, transformations, everyone to battle stations.
Next generation on your favorite station. We start the series, but when we are gone, it'll feel beyond. We start the series. It's the next generation on your favorite station. We start the series.
Well, good evening, Trekkies around the globe. Welcome to Comic Corner, a Star Trek edition presented by Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York. I'm Uncle Jim, your most excellent host, and with me as usual are my collection of Trek-sperts, and we'll start off with Charles. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. We're getting a little bit of warmth popping in, then we're going to get a cold wave, and I think it's going to calm down. We're going to get beautiful weather. Great.
Well,
finally.
I hate to say it, but I think our weather is pretty much gone here. I think we're looking at cold and cold and more cold, and soon it'll be snow and ice, and Leslie will be buried up in Saranac Lake, and that was it. We got our 3.5 months of nice weather, but such is life up here in New England. And we also have with us Eric. Eric's out in Portland. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing fantastically. I'm having a pretty cool day. We've got amazing weather here. I'm sorry, guys, but we've had literally like sunny and 70 degrees for like 4 or 5 days in a row. So can't complain about that end of things.
No, I hear you. And we also have with us TJ from Freakopolis Geekery. He's way over the border, way, way, way over there in Whitehall. But at any rate, how you doing tonight, TJ?
I'm doing very well. Ready to talk some awesome comic books.
Yeah, we got some great stuff. You know, it's a great time to be a Star Trek fan. We just got our collective minds blown with all the information that came out of New York City Comic Con. In fact, my mind was blown so wide open that on Saturday we closed up camp, and on Saturday I came home and I walked in, and my daughter Jamie was like, Dad, did you see it? Did you see it? Did I see what? And then I watched the trailers, and my mind was blown, and I immediately got a messenger, and I said, hey, guys, we got to do something. You know, we got to do an impromptu live show, like right now. We got to get our reactions to all this information out there before we have a chance to think about it, digest it, or analyze it. Let's just go with it. So I was able to get GM Chris and Charles and one of our good friends and patrons, David, together. And we did a live impromptu show on Saturday night, so you guys can go and check that out. It's under New York City Comic-Con Reactions, and you can see what we thought about seeing all that stuff right fresh, right, like when you guys watched it. We watched it, and you can hear what we thought about it. It was a lot of fun, and we were talking before the show. We're not going to do those quick treks very often, but when something new comes up, when something hits like that, if I can get the guys together, however many we can get together, we will do another one of those quick treks for you guys. We had a lot of fun doing it. At any rate, Star Trek Discovery Season 3 dropped the trailer on us, and we're going to really break that down and discuss it Thursday night on Trek Talk, and you guys don't want to miss that, as well as Picard and the Short Trek Q&A, which deals with Spock and Number One. And so without any further ado, we're going to be talking on Comic Corner tonight about Star Trek Year 5, Issue Number 6, and Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, Issue Number 2. So that's what we're going to be talking about. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. That's 646-668-2433. If you want to talk about the comic books, or if you just want to call and tell us what you thought about any of the Star Trek news that bombarded us from New York City Comic Con, we'll welcome that as well. 646-668-2433 is our number. And without any further ado, I'm going to turn it over to TJ, and we're going to start off with Star Trek Year 5, Issue Number 6, and take it away, TJ.
I would be happy to. So, year five, as you guys know, is our ongoing Star Trek comic book right now. No end in sight for this baby. Number six is about as high as we've gotten for Star Trek comic books since Boldly Go went to, I think, 18 issues. Now we're past the miniseries point for Star Trek Year 5, which I think is really cool. And this marks the end of the first collection, the first trade paperback with number six. And I think it kind of feels like that. A lot of the times, a first issue obviously introduces a bunch of stuff. A sixth issue tends to wrap some things up because a lot of times writers write for the trade. They write for the collected edition. And we got some of that here. We got some resolution to some storylines, but there's still a lot of open doors. There's still a lot of questions yet unanswered. So as we know, this book has been written sort of with like two issues in mind. We've gotten now like three two-issue stories, very episodic, detailing the fifth year of the Enterprise's original mission. And this picks up sort of right where number five left off, following an archaeological mission on the long-dead planet of Hesperides I. The crew of the Enterprise find themselves in the grip of a mysterious affliction. Communicators are untrustworthy. People are hearing things that others never said, and tensions are hitting a boiling point. Captain Kirk instructs Uhura to investigate the cause of communications breakdown before she can begin. She's shocked when Bright Eyes addresses her in Federation standard. Bright Eyes, of course, being the Tholian child from the very first issue, I believe, of this series. So yeah, it opens up right where number five left off, with Uhura being shocked Bright Eyes is able to talk to her at all. And of course, she basically says, "Wow, you can speak Federation standard?" And they have a little, communication there, sort of back and forth, but mostly just, the two of them, the Tholian child and Uhura, finally making headway on some communication. But alas, Uhura must leave the Tholian child to go try and find out what this communication affliction that is affecting all of the Enterprise, where the root of it is. So she meets in the ready room with Captain Kirk and Bones and Spock, and she begins to figure out that something is happening where crew members can read each other's minds and their thoughts, and not necessarily they're not hearing exactly what the other party is saying, but what they're thinking. She does that with a cool sort of card trick. So after determining that, the sort of commanding officers agree to take a look at the archaeological finds from Hesperides I, as well as Bone gets some brain scans going on some of the most affected crew members. And so they decide to travel back to Hesperides I in the event that the cause isn't something that they brought with them. They intend to find it. But on their way back, they encounter a Klingon bird of prey. And you get a great shot of them sort of, in the middle of outer space facing off against each other. And, trouble is brewing due to all these communication errors that they're having. Spock and Kirk go back and forth on how to handle this and decide that Kirk really doesn't have a choice other than to talk to these guys and try and go about it diplomatically. Of course, he sort of levels with them and, gets kind of brash. And while the Klingons, aren't crazy about that, it sows some discord within their own bridge, and they give them leave to hopefully find the cause of this communication error, because they begin to fall prey to it as well and begin hearing each other's thoughts. So this affliction is sort of transmitting beyond just the hull of the Enterprise. And then we get some resolution, basically. We find out that it is indeed the artifacts that were brought from the planet side. They bring them back, and things begin to go back to normal. On the final page, we learn that Uhura spent some more time talking with Bright Eyes, the Tholian child, and has been they've managed to create a Tholian Rosetta Stone, as it were. And while there's still some syntax and grammatical errors to work out, communications are opening, and they'll be able to sort of start talking with the Tholian Assembly, hopefully. So, you know, very episodic. It wraps up this particular, you know, sort of occurrence on the Enterprise very well, but it doesn't, it fell short for me a little with the child. I would have loved to have had another scene in the middle of the book talking with the Tholian child. We get sort of a beginning and a conclusion to that arc, but no real sort of second arc, I think. And there's so many questions in terms of who was holding the gun at the beginning of the first couple issues, and that this is all a flashback, as we've talked about in the past. No resolution to that stuff yet, but that makes sense. I mean, this is an ongoing title, so you know, I'm sure that will continue to be looked into as the book progresses. I just expected some nod to it, I suppose. The scenes, you know, on the ready room and talking to the Klingons were all done very, very well. This really felt like an original series issue for me. I just guess I wish it had touched on some of the stuff that's been woven throughout the book so far. It doesn't feel so much like a, you know, trade cap as I would have expected. Went into this expecting some more revelations about the ongoing stuff. And, you know, that didn't happen, and that's okay. It's still a great book. I still think this is one of the best Star Trek books we've had in years. But, you know, it does have a rotating cast of writers and artists. Every couple issues it changes up, so everybody's got a little bit of a different take, which I kind of appreciate, but I still wish I had seen some more of those threads that they've woven throughout this story so far. What'd you guys think?
Well, being a Klingon fan, I've got to say, the one thing that I noticed right away, and I was like, oh my God, was that we saw Turtlehead, we saw Imperial Klingons from Star Trek The Motion Picture in the Star Trek comic book based during the TOS time. I don't know if any of you other guys know. I'm sure you guys all noticed that.
Of course. But, it's one of the main things I noticed.
Yeah. I mean, my God, what more could you want?
I mean, it's amazing. And the design of their ship was so cool.
Yeah, I was totally impressed that they mixed in Imperial Klingons with skinhead Klingons, because on TOS that was never done before, but here in the comic book they did, and I thought that was really cool. And like Eric said, the ship, I could easily see that as a bird of prey, you know, becoming a bird of prey down the road. So yeah, that's what I noticed right away, and I was really impressed by that. I really like the colors that they used in this issue. It was very colorful, very bright, very vibrant. I liked the panels. I thought they moved really well. They were easy to follow. I didn't get stuck reading the wrong bubble and then thinking, oh, I read that out of order. You know, everything had a really good flow to it. Klingons. Did I mention the Klingons? Yeah, I think I did. So I enjoyed that. The only thing that I thought was a drawback, the only thing that I was kind of like, really? Are you kidding me? Is that the way they resolved it was, we're just going to go back and drop these things off and fly away and call it a day. And I was like, okay, that to me felt like my life of watching Star Trek, I think I can honestly and sincerely say to you as I stand before you here tonight, that I have never seen a Star Trek episode where they did that. Oh, well, we can't figure it out, so let's just leave. I just, thought that was so strange. I thought it was a weird way to answer that question. And I just, I don't know. That was my only complaint about the book, is the way they resolved it was to not resolve it. I thought that was strange. But the art, like I said, I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed seeing the Klingons and the colors. The artwork was really good. The characters felt like characters. It was just that weird ending to me. So that was my take on it. What about you, Eric?
Well, you know, there were some interesting things about this book. I tend to agree with some of the things that have been said. The first thing that I noticed was that the paper it was printed on seemed to be just a little bit different from kind of the standard IDW paper. You know, the standard comic book that we get from IDW usually has kind of this, I don't know how to describe it. It's almost like a glossy sort of finish to it that reflects a lot of light. And I just noticed my copy is, it's kind of a little bit more of a matte finish. And I don't know if that was just my copy or if that's how they all were printed. Did you guys notice any difference in the paper at all?
Let me pull mine out and take a look.
Yeah, it is a little, I don't know, it's got a different feel to it.
Yeah, it's almost like quality, a little thinner or something. And then what it did for me was it made it look a little bit more like an old-timey comic, rather than a kind of slick, you know, IDW comic. Maybe that's because we're reading stories from TOS that, you know, was of course set back when comics that I'm thinking about were actually made. But so I noticed the quality of the paper. One of the things that I really liked about the way that this story did play out was that it didn't turn out to be another kind of, you know, case of space madness. I think about the Naked Time, you know, that episode and the kind of space madness theme. And I was a little bit worried last issue when we had a bunch of red shirts fighting each other for no apparent reason, that that's what it was going to be. But I was glad to see that it resolved into something that was kind of language and brain based instead. I thought that was a more interesting way to take the story. I do, Jim. I love the Klingons. The Klingons were amazing. I noticed that they were, motion picture Klingons with the knobbies. You called them Imperial Klingons. I didn't know that term. That's a cool term to know. But the knobby-headed Klingons. And the dude that was running that ship looked awesome. He had like a metal plate bolted to his face, which just, you know, a la Chang with the eye patch kind of bolted to his face. So he looked really super cool. You know, I was thinking about the Tholians and the fact that we've had the Tholians kind of involved in the story here for a long time. And I was thinking about where they've shown up. And as far as I know, they've only shown up in TOS and Enterprise, right? They never showed up in any of the Next Generation shows.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, so this is actually our furthest forward in time view of the Tholians. So we're sort of creating Tholian a canon adjacency here, so to speak. And what's interesting is that, you know, we've got Uhura making the universal translator for the Tholian language at the end here. That leads into a really cool kind of like, you know, maybe we learn more about the Tholians in the future. Maybe by the time TNG comes around, we have some sort of relationship with the Tholians. I don't know. But that this comic kind of is the furthest forward the Tholians of the Tholians that we've seen, which I thought was pretty cool. Just a few other things. Like, I also agree with TJ. I thought the gun thing at the beginning of issue number one was going to kind of get resolved here, and it didn't. So to me, that tells me that the series is going to resolve it somewhere down the road, which I think is interesting. Jim, you said the colors. I also noticed the colors. They're very vibrant, and there's a lot of them. So it gives the book a real vibrancy, I think, which is great because I love that offset with the slightly matte, more matte tone paper. It kind of like, I don't know, it just balanced really well for me visually. So overall, I like this book. I got to agree with the resolution being a little cheesy. Considering how sophisticated this book started out, its resolution felt a little less sophisticated in the first six issues. But, you know, as we launch into the next series, maybe that sophistication will return. So overall, definitely liked it. Don't really have too many bad things to say about it.
And I did. I compared this one to the Discovery one that we're going to talk about next. And yes, the year five is definitely, I think is the best way to put it. It's the cover's different, the pages are different, and I think you're right. It looks like it's a matte paper, and Discovery is a high gloss. So they did change the paper for that book. Absolutely.
Well, I kind of want to pull up my micrometer because I feel like its thickness is different too. It feels just a little different to me. Maybe I'll do a little engineering investigation on that and report back.
It's possible. The paper is definitely different though. If you put the two issues side by side, there's a difference. Absolutely. So, Charles, you're up next. Star Trek Year 5, issue number 6. Go.
Okay. Well, one thing I was trying to bring up to TJ and he missed. He forgot I let him know how many issues are in this series. There will be a total of 24, which means we're going for 2 years if we go monthly on this series. So we got 24 issues and that's it. But that'll be also 12 complete episodes in there. Yes, I think this one did feel to me like a episode between the two issues. A definite episode with the A and B story. One of the things I love how Uhura figures it out is she sits there and tells Kirk, I want you to read this, but just see what it says. He's like, huh? And he reads it saying, this is a dog. I forgot, I said something about this is really a cat, and he's only thinking about it.
Yeah.
And yet the two crewmen just sit there and write it down. It's like, and they write down exactly what he's thinking.
And
then
we
realize, crystals are actually allowing them to have some telepathy ability, which they start to understand. It's like, what's happened in the time period that this has occurred? We've gotten the ancient artifacts. And then I think they get proof when they run into the Klingons that it's definitely they've been affected as well. And what's the way we can maybe break this curse? Allow the stuff to go back to where it belongs. And maybe the Federation will go back and study them there where they might not be infected as badly. Because I thought it. And I think the story with the Tholians is going to continue. It's still a maintaining story. So we got a tease into story B. But we're still going to see some more of B coming in the next episode. And I think you might look at the authors and the illustrators. But I'm thinking the authors and illustrators team worked together for two issues to do one complete episode. Then they'll get another group to do the next episode. So
right.
we're having multiple groups working on a pair of issues. Now, I, for one, have my comics digital, so I didn't get a chance to do the paper. But I still enjoy the visual look of this as we've been going through these six issues. It's still... And maybe they're using the matte paper as more of a classic issue.
Well, yeah.
More classic comics are more matte because they don't want to do paper.
Well, it's
and
just
they
the
said,
first...
well, we don't want to go all the way to paper, but maybe a matte's going to give us more of a traditional feel than a modern feel.
And you're right. Maybe this is an experiment because I think this is the first Star Trek comic we've gotten from IDW, you know, in the last 2 or 3 years since we've been renewing the Golden Age here, that we've actually seen this kind of paper on. Everything else has been that kind of high gloss stock all the way from Light of Kalos, which I think was the first one.
Well, what I would do is go back and double check all of the year five issues. And see if the year fives have been
the year four issues. Oh no, I went back
year five.
No, I went back and checked all the
year
five. This is the only number six has this paper. All the rest of them have that classic IDW paper. Yeah.
Maybe they're working on some new paper.
That's what I wondered, if this was kind of an experiment, and they kind of put it out there to see if people would like it or not, and I, for one, like it. I think it fits this comic. Yeah, stylistically, it fits this comic for sure.
And that might be a great comic for some of the old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You get to bring up the caboose, Jamie, and drive this whole thing home. What'd you think about it?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I did like the attention that they put into all the details of the different Klingons, and I did appreciate what they did at the end. It was kind of a little hilarious here because I'm like, okay, let's just drop what we're doing. I'm like, that's a really open end. Of course, there's another issue, so it's always going to be a little open ended. But I'm like, okay, let's just drop what we're doing and leave. I just thought the last for a second. It was a little, okay, we're done. And then it's like, wait, there's not more. But anyhow, I thought they did a good job with the end, like making you want to read more, because if a book doesn't do that, it doesn't have to be a comic book, then it's not a good book. But having said that, I think the art was great. There wasn't any problems that I saw with the little dialogue boxes. Everything seemed to flow well. The story was well, both the A and B plots. And the Napoleon thing is really great. I like how they draw those. It just gets me every time. And every time you read this IDW and even the Discovery book, the art just gets better and better.
I agree. And anybody have any closing thoughts before we go to our commercial break?
Well, I was just going to mention that I thought it was interesting that even though I was a little bothered by the ending, the book is really just about mental control. So it really was only the fact that the crew couldn't hide their own thoughts that really caused the breakdown of communication on the ship. And so, theoretically, a very well-disciplined team of Federation folks should be able to go back, as Charles was suggesting, to this planet and actually kind of explore these things. Because really, if the crew didn't care what they were saying about each other kind of in their thoughts versus what they were saying out loud, there would not have been a problem. So the issue a little bit explores the importance, maybe, of being able to keep our own mental secrets when we communicate with people. You know, when we talk to somebody, we don't reveal everything we're thinking about either them or the situation or that type of stuff. And this issue a little bit explores what happens if that barrier is broken. And in that way, kind of, you know, celebrates how important it is that we have those barriers here and there.
Agreed. And anybody else have any clothing thoughts? Closing thoughts before we move
clothing
on.
Thoughts.
Clothing thoughts.
Yeah,
yeah, I was
like
saying what I was thinking.
I wanted to talk about Year 5 on the whole a little bit. You know, like we've said, it has sort of a rotating cast of writers and artists. And, I think that is really a strength of the book on the whole. We had a very sort of classic literature style story in the first two issues. In the middle, it was a super dense political, lots going on, lots of development for issues 3 and 4. And then 5 and 6 were a little more lighthearted, but with some really great, you know, the coloring really did bring a lot to this. And, you know, I think the Uhura-led story was really cool. So far, I think this book has a little bit of something for everybody. I've liked certain issues better than others, but I know that in 2 issues, I'm going to get something new, which I think is really exciting. A lot of the times Marvel will have sort of an inconsistent rotation of artists on their books, and that tends to bug me. But so far, everybody on this book has really been knocking it out of the park, I think. And this is probably one of the strongest books we've talked about, in my opinion, on Comic Corner. And I mean, if you don't dig this resolution or this next couple issues, well, you know you have something new right around the corner. And I think that's really cool. I enjoy what they're doing here. It feels, maybe that's part of the experimentation we've been talking about with not only the paper, but with creative teams and letting other people tell their stories too. So Overall, I think this has been really cool. I think, you know, despite my gripes about some resolution stuff, this was a really strong issue.
And listen, we're going to take a quick commercial break and hear a little word from our sponsors. So run off and get something to drink real quick. Run off to the bathroom, but don't touch the dial, because we'll be right back after this quick message, and we're going to dive right into Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, issue number 2. We'll be right back.
This podcast is brought to you in part by the Freakopolis Geekery, the premier upstate New York comics and game shop. Centrally located between Saratoga Glens Falls, Ticonderoga, and Rutland, Vermont, the Geekery is a haven for pop culture and science fiction fans. For Star Trek fans, the Geekery features board games like Ascendancy, as well as awesome gaming titles like Star Trek Adventures RPG from Modiphius, Star Trek Away Team's HeroClix, and of course, Star Trek Attack Wing ship-to-ship tactical combat for the tabletop. The Geekery hosts casual play sessions, learn-to-play sessions, and sanctioned organized play tournaments with limited edition prize support. You'll also find comics and trade paperbacks at Freakopolis, including Star Trek titles from IDW. Lots of issues are in stock, and special orders are no problem. Whether you visit in person by shuttlecraft or beam in online to Freakopolis.com, you'll find yourself right at home at the Freakopolis Geekery.
And we're back. TJ, that dude sounds awful familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You must have been using a good mic, because your voice sounds good.
He does sound familiar. All right. So anyways, next we're going to talk about Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, issue number 2. Take it away, TJ.
Indeed. And if you like the Klingons and Star Trek Year 5, number 6, you're going to love this book. Tons of
I can't agree with you anymore. I'm chomping at the bit to dive into it.
Yes. So this is a three-issue mini-series from IDW, Star Trek Discovery Aftermath. This is part 2 of that series, and it very much feels like a second act, I think. The first issue gathered all the players and set the parts and pieces up, got us back into the world of Discovery, but we get into the meat of the story in this issue, I think. So I'll read the sort of get us caught up to speed on the first page here. This story takes place between the disappearance of the USS Discovery, so after season 2, and the return of Spock to an active duty on the USS Enterprise at the end of season 2. Captain Pike has retrieved his first officer, Mr. Spock, who was on leave on Vulcan after the disappearance of his sister, which has shaken him to the core. Reluctantly, Spock has agreed to accompany Captain Pike to a political summit with the Klingons. Meanwhile, Laurel has enlisted the help of young Kor to help keep her safe from those who are unhappy with her rule. But Kor is brewing secret plans of his own behind her back. We sort of cold open. Boom. They're arriving at the summit, Captain Pike and Mr. Spock, young Mr. Spock. Captain Pike seems to be talking Spock, you know, down or up. You know, he's not trying to, he's telling him to be calm, but it seems a bit more like he's trying to reassure himself, you know, and Spock kind of seems that as well. And right after this first page, boom, flip the page, and you've got this awesome splash page of the Cleave ship in orbit on the Peace Summit planet, this neutral planet. Great splash image, the Cleave ship just looming ominously over these snow-capped mountains that presumably they'll be meeting, there will be a meeting of the Klingons and the Federation between, but clearly a show of force. You get this, these thoughts from Captain Pike's perspective, sort of a captain's log of, as much as Chancellor Laurel might be more open-minded than the rest of the High Council, she is still a Klingon, and they're just sort of beaming at this Cleave ship, which I don't think we've seen since season 1, right? We didn't see it at all in season 2.
True.
Yeah, so really cool to see the return of that ship. Clearly doing a show of force. We introduce the players. Everybody sort of meets up, the members from the Federation, and the Klingons, including Laurel and Kor. And Laurel really wants to get right down to business. We get a little bit of Klingon nuk-neh. What do we want? As our diplomat translates for us, our Andorian diplomat. So they sort of make acquaintances and decide to start the summit immediately because, as Laurel says, truth is found in action. Spock still feeling a little out of place. He was throughout season two, and I think still after the events of season two is feeling like he needs to find himself. But unfortunately, he feels as though he's in the place at this summit, in the place of someone who should be, and he doesn't really deserve to be there. Even though he's just there as an advisor to Captain Pike, he feels like Michael Burnham would be much more at home. She knows both these parties quite well, and instead he's the one sort of stuck here. Unfortunately, the talks don't go great. They're sort of on the rocks. Spock advises Captain Pike that they should temper their expectations, but he feels like this is their chance to strike and really, go for broke, begin embassies and exchange programs between academies and sharing of technology. But Spock is reluctant to do so. Laurel then demands to meet with Spock privately and asks Spock to be an advisor to her as well. So now he's advising for two parties, both Captain Pike and Laurel. So sort of taken after his father there a little bit. Because she knows that there's people on Kronos that would wish her to fail. They're not big fans of her, and she knows it. So any way that this can go well is good for her, basically. Captain Pike checks in on the Enterprise. Things are going pretty good up there, although it is time for their ceremonial banquet. We see Captain Pike slurping down a large bowl of Gak. And Gak. Thank you. Not Gak. That's from Nickelodeon. And he does quite well, presumably. They laud him for his constitution and his stomach's ability to handle it.
Although he keeps sick bay on standby.
Yes, yeah. Quickly after we learn, he may not. It might be just holding it down just barely. The admiral proposes a toast. But before he is able to finish, obviously drawing two planets together, hoping to find some peace, ba-boom, a huge explosion goes off inside the summit, and we're in a whole other gear now. Laurel is on the floor with Kor, trying to protect her. He gets shot by a phaser of some kind. Pike and Spock are trying to hail the Enterprise and get some support, hopefully to take control of the situation as these black hooded and masked figures assault the summit attendees. Spock and Captain Pike crash through a window in hopes of escaping, and we learn that the assailants are here to capture and interrogate Laurel, as they are the Shadows of Kaelas, which I think is just such an awesome name. You have the light of Kaelas and the shadows of them. I think, really thematically strong there. So it's a bunch of Klingons who have assaulted the summit and broken up the peaceful peace talks. And then we get one final page with Spock carrying Captain Pike on his back through these snow-covered mountains in the middle of a blizzard in an effort to, keep him alive, essentially. So peace talks did not go as planned and are not off to a great start. We only have one more issue of this. I assume that will be sort of the Act 3, obviously, and we'll get some resolution to some of these things. Will the Klingons and Federation make peace? Will Spock and Captain Pike survive? Will Laurel and Core hash out the differences. We'll find out next time. But overall, pretty solid book. I think I like this better than the first issue. And, you know, I think that's the fact that we start getting into some of the meat of this story that they want to tell in terms of, you know, the summit and what's going to happen there, who these other factions are on Kronos, Pike's excitement at the fact that there's lots of possibility afoot, and Spock continuing to deal with the loss of his sister, presumably. So lots of great stories. I really liked the narrative. The point of view sort of skips around a little bit in this. It doesn't skip around. It has a progression inside this issue. It starts from sort of Captain Pike. We get some captain's log. Quickly moves on to Spock. We get his feelings on the summit on the whole and his loss that he suffered. And then before too long, it moves to Laurel and her feelings on the summit and her knowing that, you know, her struggling with her own position. So I like that point of view change a lot. I thought it lent itself really well to moving the story forward and getting a holistic view of the happenings here. The art's pretty solid. Nothing too special, but I think Tony Chastain always does a pretty solid job, always gets those likenesses great, always is very clear and concise, and, you know, the splash pages are really fun, too, so the character designs are on point. Overall, you know, I don't know that this is going to move the needle so far, but it should wrap up some of this stuff from Season 2 and sort of give us a heading for Season 3 probably in some manner, or at least where what happens to the Federation immediately after Season 2, which I think is pretty cool. Nothing too groundbreaking. Lots of great Klingon action. Like I said, I thought the Shadows of Kalis, despite being, you know, so disruptive, were really cool. I just think that's a great name. They have a great look. And, I mean, played a really strong role in this. So, pretty solid book. I'm sure you guys enjoyed it as well. Curious to hear what you think.
Well, I love this one, obviously. I love Laurel. I think she's my favorite Klingon now. I think she's awesome. I'm really disappointed that we're not going to see her in Season 3 of Discovery, because I think she was such a strong Klingon and a strong female character that I'm a little disappointed that we won't see her. And if Discovery stays in the future, I don't think we'll ever get a chance to see that character again. And that disappoints me, because I just love what Mary Chifo brought to that character, but I get to see her in the comic books, so that's okay. Can anybody say Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country? I think you're seeing flashes of that. I think they're setting that up in Discovery. We have a very similar storyline where we have peace and we have people that don't want it, that attack the peace conference, blah, blah, blah. We do know that eventually at some point in time in the future, we do know that Spock does foster peace between the Federation and the Klingons. So this is a prelude to what he's going to do later on in his career, which I think is awesome. I also thought the whole Klingon storyline was really good, because we see Skinhead Core, which was another thing I thought was really cool. They mixed the Klingon races together in this one. We see TOS Skinhead Core plotting to overthrow Laurel. And then when Laurel asks him to be her personal honor guard, we see that he's honor bound to protect her, and he could easily have let her die, but rather he doesn't. So the backstabbing, conniving Core that we see in the previous issue, I think his Klingon honor got the better of him, and he did what honor demanded of him to do, which I thought was great. The interactions between Laurel and Pike are exactly what you would expect them to be. And I think that Laurel is a precursor. We talked about this before. I think Laurel is the precursor for Chancellor Gorkon, who we will see in Star Trek VI. And we don't exactly know the time frame between when he becomes Chancellor and when she doesn't become Chancellor. But I think it's a safe assumption that the Chancellorship kind of rolls over from Laurel to Gorkon. I think, anyways. Could be wrong, but that's what I think. And Spock, I think Spock dealing with everything that he has going on was beautifully written. And this whole book, I enjoyed it thoroughly. The Klingon stuff was spectacular. The artwork was great. The Cleave ship, that open page where you see this giant Cleave ship was just, wow, this is the way the Klingons would do it. They're going to show up and say, hey, dudes, we're going to kick your butt. And, you know, we can do it if we want to. And here's the proof. And I thought it was great. And my only drawback, the only, I don't know if it's even a drawback, but my only thing that is like, why do they keep giving us such short story arcs for Discovery? Because I clearly think with the amount of Discovery books we've had that we don't have to keep having these short issues. Why don't they give us a grander story? Why don't they go on with the Laurel story more than one issue? Because, you know, I don't think I'm going to be satisfied when they wrap this all up in one issue. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll be the best issue ever. But I see so many story possibilities and so many arcs that to wrap this all up in one more issue, I think is going to leave me feeling kind of like, what? But we'll see next month. I loved it. I think this is a great book. And I think anyone that is a Discovery fan has got to jump on the IDW bus and get into these Discovery books, because every book that we've read from Discovery that we reviewed on this podcast has been outstanding, all of them. And this is no exception. So if you're a Discovery fan, as JK said, canon adjacent, here it is. This feels like, to me, this feels like this could actually be happening in the Federation while Discovery is happening in the future. That's how well it's written and how well it reads and how good the characters are interpreted on the page. That as I'm reading this, I'm thinking this is what Pike and Spock are doing back in the Federation while Discovery is 930 years in the future doing what they're doing, which I can't wait to talk about on Thursday night. And that's the way I look at it. So kudos to IDW for knocking another one out of the ballpark. So that's my take. And Jamie, you had to wait till the end last time, so I'll let you start off this time with your thoughts about the Discovery book.
Well, I'm just going to start with the cover, because that's a great place to start. The colors, the art in this was just mind-blowing. It gets better and better as you read it. And every page is a colorful surprise. And the dialogue boxes are very, very easy to read, and it just seems like they really made an effort to make them clear, and the font was a good size where you could read it, where you're not squinting, and you mess up the bubble that you're reading before that because the print is so small. That bugs me when the comic books do that. But anyways, besides that, the whole storyline was good. I did like that was a big part in this, and I did like what they did with her claw in the beginning, where she just looks like she's literally clawing the ships on the front page. And then the end was just, in my opinion, all I can say is phenomenal. Wow. I wasn't as floored as I was with the last issue, where it's like, wait a minute, this is how it's going to end? Well, that was a crappy ending. This is actually a good ending. And they leave you in a good enough spot. You're like, oh, okay, so I know what's going on. But my biggest thing was I was just wowed by what they did with the art and the whole storyline that's been going on with Laurel. So I'm just going to go ahead and give this book a 10 out of 10. It was great.
It was good. And how about you, Charles? What do you think?
It was definitely good. Continue on a very good written book. I love the interactions of how and Pike interact with each other. I love how Pike wants to go in there and kind of being a bit of a partier. He kind of wants to get in with the Klingons, want to try the Gok, which surprised the Klingons. Like, oh man, they were surprised at what he was willing to do. Like, okay, I'm feeling a little sick, but I got to do it just for them. And I thought the interactions where she goes to, Laurel goes to Spock and wants to get kind of information, his opinion of things is going on. The ending was interesting. That's going to be one of those, like, okay, you got to see what's going to happen next, because we know what's going to happen, but we got to figure out how we're going to get there. As Jim thinking this is the last we're going to see of Laurel, I don't think so. I'm still wondering if we're going to get teases of current timeline in Discovery. If we don't, then I think we're going to get current time back in with Section 31. Because I don't think Section 31 is going to abandon her. I think they're still going to want to know what's going on with her and make sure that they've got an eye on the Klingon Empire. So I don't think we're done with Mary Chifa at all. I think we've still got a lot more time with her. Discovery bound, but I think we're still going to see more of her.
Maybe some Klingon short treks, maybe, where we catch up with Laurel and the Klingon Empire, maybe. Would be cool.
That could be, yeah, that would be cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
I just love
the
character.
The point is, maybe not as many fans want Klingons, but I think there are fans that want Klingons, or fans that want more Pike and Enterprise. So I think they've got a lot more stuff rolling around that fans are interested in, that they're going to like, okay, it may be on the back burner for a little while, but we still got directions we got to go to satisfy the fans. And I think
I agree.
That's part of their goal, is to satisfy the fans.
I agree. And guess what, Eric? You get the caboose this time. Jamie had it on the last issue. You get it on this one.
Nice. Well, I totally dug this issue for so many great reasons. You guys have hit on a lot of them. I love the first page because you mentioned it, Jim. You get this whole setup between Pike and Spock, and you get the sense that they're kind of working off of each other. And then later on in the book, like, I don't know, 5-6 pages later, you get the scene where Spock's kind of soliloquying to himself, which, by the way, TJ, you mentioned that. Did you also notice throughout the book that they use different color text boxes for all the characters? So, like, Pike's is yellow, Laurel's is purple, I think Spock's is purple, Laurel's got her own color, like a dark purple. So I thought that was really cool. You get to follow the internal dialogue of multiple characters throughout the issue. So I thought that was pretty cool. The Cleave ship was awesome. Core look exactly like Core from TOS? Like, the face that they're able to evoke with that character, I think, is amazing. I look at him and I just see the actor whose name is escaping me right now. But I just see his face in the Core.
John Colicos.
That's what it is. Yeah, exactly. So I really like the way that he looks. I like the exploration of Spock's internal doubt about himself. I mean, you know, at the very end of Discovery Season 2, we kind of get this splash of Spock without the beard on the bridge. We don't really know how much time has elapsed between the time that we see him with the beard and the time we don't see him without the beard, although the tease for issue number 3 of this does show Spock without a beard. So presumably maybe next issue we get to see him shave it. Not really sure.
Well, I think this issue is going to end when Spock walks on the bridge in the final scenes of Discovery Season 2.
Yeah, I bet you're right,
Charles. We're kind of tying in from when Discovery leaves to when Spock walks on the bridge, and we're filling in that gap.
That gap there, yeah. So that'll be cool. So maybe we get to see him shave the bridge and then, or shave the beard and then walk onto the bridge. Shave the bridge, walk onto the beard. So, but however, by far, by a long shot, my favorite page on the whole in the whole book is the one where Pike is eating the gach. And it's not only because you've got you know, a group of Klingons around him yelling gach, 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 but so my personal favorite character in comics is Deadpool, and I love him because he breaks the fourth wall constantly, and I love that in theater. I love it in Shakespeare. I love it every time I see it on the stage. And so I feel like this page where Pike is eating this big giant bowl of gach, he's looking right into the camera, right? He's looking right at you while he's doing it, kind of acknowledging how ridiculous this whole situation is, but that he's taken one for the team. And after he sort of dumps it in the third picture, he looks back at the camera, and then the Klingon next to him looks right back at the camera and is like, holy crap, what'd this guy just do? You know? So I don't know. I really, really love that panel in this book. I think it's really good. The Andorian Admiral is awesome.
Did that remind you of the episode Matter of Honor, where Riker goes aboard the Klingon ship and he's eating the Klingon food with the Klingons, and the two Klingon women are coming on to him, and he goes, one or both?
Absolutely. It absolutely reminded me of that moment. And then it's not too far after that that I was reminded of another episode. You know, Troy was mentioning the coolness of the name, the Shadows of Kaelas. That totally then reminded me of the Discovery episode, Through the Valley of Shadows, which has the same name and was all about the time crystals and Kaelas. So I like this idea that we're getting this repeat of shadows as a word that's kind of associated with these Klingon stories. And did you notice that the guys who were on the assault team, they were bald Klingons, so they were still at war. Whereas the rest of the Klingons, even Kor has grown his hair back. Laurel has grown her hair back. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they made that distinction, that these people who think that Laurel is a usurper think that the war never ended and they are still fighting on. And of course we get that great last page with Pike, you know, Spock carrying Pike through the snow, you know, after saying, do you trust me, Captain? And he said, of course I do. And, you know, now they're in peril. So great book overall. I a little bit agree with you, Jim, that I would love to see more Laurel stories because she is totally awesome. I got a little nervous in this book. I was like, oh my God, are they going to start to like move toward killing off Laurel somehow? But I doubt they'll go that far with the lore. Hopefully we see some interesting resolution at the end of the story, because right now she's in deep doo-doo. So we got one issue to figure out how she gets out of that or how she doesn't get out of it. Maybe it leads into season 3. I don't know. We'll see. Or section 31, maybe.
Well, as we've seen from IDW, they could have another Discovery book planned right around the corner that we don't know anything about.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I mean, the nice thing about, even though I agree with you in some ways that it'd be nice to have an ongoing title that kind of tells a story, these little mini series allow them to kind of stop in and fill in little chunks of canon adjacency and not necessarily have to string together a long, you know, serial based thing that all makes sense and kind of fits together. I think it's a good strategy because it gives the fans what they want in terms of story filler between season 2 and season 3. But it doesn't give them so much information that then it starts to color the way that they, you know, maybe see season 3 or maybe see season 1 and season 2 when they go back and watch. They want to make sure it all fits together and that the comic books don't create too much lore in and of themselves.
Well, I know the names Christian Beyer and Mike Johnson sound familiar to people.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, and so...
yeah. Well, and Tony Shepard has done a bunch of art for previous books too. So that, you know, the team they're using on this book is definitely an experienced Trek IDW team, which is, I think, partly what's making it really good. I mean, I know we kind of sort of ooh and ah over every Discovery book we read, but I don't know. I kind of feel like it's justified. Most of them are pretty good.
Well, for me, I want to give a shout out to David. David is a good friend of ours and one of our Patreons. If you guys like this show and Trek Talkin', Stunt Trek, and The War Room, head on over to patreon.com/trektalkin and take a look at what we have to offer. We'd love to have you as a patron supporting this show and keeping us going. It's really important to us. And David is one of our patrons, and I want to give him a shout out. I know he's listening right now. I think that one of the things we have going for us, and I think we're going to see this with Picard as well, is that, you know, TOS and TNG and Voyager or Deep Space Nine, these shows have been off for decades, and, you know, whereas Discovery is currently on, it's live, it's happening right now, it's brand new. And so these writers that are working for the show and also on the comic books, they have a lot of storylines that they can follow that tie directly into the show and fill in a lot of the gaps that they don't have time to do on the show. And I think the reason why we always woo over the Discovery books is because they fit so nicely into bookends of what we see on the TV show.
Yeah.
Whereas with Star Trek, with the TOS that we're reading right now, year five, you know, we're going 50 years back and just writing stories about stuff that already happened and trying to fit it in between what we know happened 50 years ago. Whereas Discovery doesn't have to do that because Discovery is happening right now. So the writers might have a scene with Laurel that they just couldn't get on the screen, and so it didn't make it to an episode. Well, guess what? That scene, which we did see, I think it was the Light of Kaelas, I think, that did that. I think it was that book, or it might have been the Stamets book. I'm not sure. But at any rate, a lot of the stuff that we don't get to see on the TV show, the IDW team gets to pick that up and run with it. And I think that's what makes it seem like a richer, more connected, more fulfilled universe because of that. And I'm not knocking the other Star Trek. It's just that Discovery is currently active live right now. And so they get to fill in that stuff as we're learning it. We get to learn it together. So
well,
I think that's why.
And I'll take what you just said, Jim, and I'll kind of kick it up a notch because I completely agree with you. But I think there's another layer on top of this because if you think about it, Star Trek Discovery is serial, right? One show flows into the next. It's one complete arc. Season one is one arc. Season two is another arc. But what have you always talked about loving in terms of a way to tell a story? Multiple times on the podcast, you've brought up Pulp Fiction and the way that that movie tells a story kind of in a reverse order and gives you little bits that kind of add to the mystery a little bit. You know, eventually it's resolved what each little mini arc is doing throughout the movie by the end of the movie. But what you're right, these books kind of allow us to fill in little bits of the story, but they're not necessarily chronological with what we've already seen, right? This story is actually happening, you know, in a little slot of time at the end of season two. And the Light of Kaelas, you know, didn't necessarily happen in a particular order with season one. So it's interesting that they're able to do both, to have the serial storytelling on the show and then use the comics as a way to kind of go back and Pulp Fiction it, tell us other little bits about the story that, you're right, they weren't able to put on the screen, but might not even fit into the timeline in a chronological way.
And you know what? I swore when I started this podcast, Comic Corner, I wasn't going to go there, but okay, I'm breaking what I promised myself, and I'm going there. I'm sorry, but I'm going there. Star Trek Picard. Oh, my God. So, and the reason why I'm going there is because, TJ, we're going to be seeing some Picard comic books, are we not? I think.
We are.
Well,
starting next month, I believe.
November something.
November 27th. We'll get the first of three issues of Star Trek Picard Countdown. Countdown, of course, being series that sort of lead into some Star Trek classics. And, we're going to get that for Picard, which is very, very exciting.
And I mention that now because I think that we're going to see exactly what we're talking about right here with Discovery. We're about to see that with Picard. And I think Picard is going to be different from TNG because it is going to be serialized. And I think that the comic books are going to just fit right in with that serialized storytelling. And we're going to get to read these comic books, and then we're going to jump right into Picard. And I heard, I don't know if this is true, but I heard that the final short trek that we're going to see is going to be a lead into Picard, the series. It's going to be a short trek that has something to do with the Picard series.
Well, and there's also a novel that happens between the Countdown series. There's a novel that comes after that called The Last Best Hope that supposedly leads right into it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think we got a lot of great stuff to read.
I'm going to bring up details about that comic. The comic's going to basically take us from, I think, right around Nemesis in the first issue. Third issue is going to lead us right into Picard series. We're going to meet some of the characters in the comic that will be in the series. We're going to read the comics, and we're going to get the series. Like, okay, we know who these characters are because we've read up in details about them. And they've said that in the panel, that's exactly what we're going to get. This is going to lead us right into Picard.
I am looking forward to that.
So we're going to be reading the comic book. Yeah.
That's going to be awesome.
And we're going to have it right for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
You get the comic book the day it comes out, you're going to have it for Thanksgiving to read.
So sweet.
Yeah.
And the book is actually going to introduce characters that are going to be on the show too. So you'll get to meet them before you get to see them on the screen if you read the book. I suggest, Charles, that you and I read the book.
Yeah,
I'd love to review.
You want to read the book?
Yeah, and anybody else who wants to read it, I just know that Charles and I gobble that stuff up.
I think that I don't want to get too much into it on Comic Corner. I want to save a lot of this discussion for Trek Talk on Thursday night, but I want to wet your whistles a little bit. I want to satiate you and tease you just a little bit so you have an idea of some of the topics that we're going to bring up on Thursday night. But what Star Trek does so well is, and they touched at this when they introduced the Klingons in season one, is it uses a lens to look at today through science fiction and the future of tomorrow. And if you just pick up a paper, go to YouTube, go anywhere, turn on the news, you'll see all kinds of topics, all kinds of things that are going on right now, right today. And then when you look at what we see in the Picard trailer, when Picard goes to Starfleet and the Admiral says, "This isn't your house anymore, Picard, go home." And Picard says, "I'm trying to fight for the Federation, for what the Federation should be and what it should stand for." And she basically says, "Hit the brakes, dude. We don't care. You're an old man. Go away." And so, you know, throws Picard out. Something drove him out of Starfleet. And then we take a look at Discovery and we find out that the Federation may not quite be the Federation that we think it will be in the future. And then you take a look at what's going on right now in our political world. And I can clearly see some threads, some connections of what's going on today versus what's going on in Star Trek. So I think that's great. I think when Star Trek challenges us with things like that and makes us look at things and ways that we may not look at them normally, I think that's great. And I think that the comic book is going to delve into that a lot deeper because we're going to get the comic book first.
Yeah.
So.
And I agree with you, Jim. And, I think that there are those, particularly some of the Discovery critics that we've talked about on previous shows, who feel that Discovery is somehow, leaning too far in one political direction or another. And I actually kind of reject that notion because I feel like even Discovery is exhibiting what we've seen as core principles direct from Gene Roddenberry, which are concepts like humanism and relying on each other as people and, as human beings becoming our best. And not necessarily delving into things like politics and things like that. It's interesting to me that some folks see that because I don't. And I do think that Discovery is doing the same things that we've seen happen throughout all the different series. I mean, I don't think anybody would argue that any Star Trek series that has ever been produced has not touched on Gene Roddenberry's core principles, even the ones that were produced entirely after he wasn't with us anymore, like Voyager and, you know, parts of DS9 and things. So, well, yeah, go ahead, Charles.
I'm going to jump in. I got thinking about that and thinking, okay, TNG, DS9, Voyager. That was the tail end of the 80s into the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
We were still in the 80s with TNG and be the, oh, it's always positive ish episodes.
Yeah.
The outlook of the country was positive. That was the decade of excess. And the other two-ish series, we were still kind of feeding off the decade of excess and just slowly working towards a short recession. But we still had a lot of that positive feeling in there.
Mm-hmm.
We had a little darker series in Enterprise because the country's mood was a little darker. We were having a lot of political problems, especially with the beginning of the wars in the Middle East. I think now with the way the country's not as much of a positive outlook, we've got a little more negative outlook. We're not thinking our futures as bright as we want it to be. And
I think that the Discovery writers
are reflecting. They're reflecting that.
I think
they
are. I think that's going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah, they're reflecting the opinion of society.
So, TJ, before we run out of time here, I'm reading these texts. I'm trying to keep up with all the texts that are flying at my phone while I'm trying to do the podcast simultaneously, and I lost it somewhere in here. So when can we expect the next books to be hit the shelves?
So we have one more book coming in October. That is year 5, number 7, so the start of a new arc on October 23rd. And then we get a couple books on November 6th. We get Star Trek Voyager, Mirrors and Smoke. Of course, we've been waiting for that for some time now. Art by J.K. Woodard. And also on November 6th, we get Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, number 3. So we got a couple things coming up. One in late October, one in two in early November.
So we should probably schedule the next Comic Corner to correspond. We'll probably do 3 books on the next show.
Yes,
which won't be the first Monday. It'll be Veterans Day, which is the 11th, right?
Right.
Oh, that's a holiday too. I mean, I'm okay doing it on Veterans Day. I think I don't have an issue with that as long as you guys don't.
I can do it.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Charles,
okay.
Is that okay? Does that work for you?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
How about you, Jamie?
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so November 11th will be the next Comic Corner. It'll be the second Monday instead of the first, and we'll have 3 books. We'll have the Voyager Mirror book and Star Trek Year 5 and the wrap-up Aftermath on the 11th. So that's when we'll do it.
Awesome.
And Eric, you said you had a comment you wanted to make before we get out of here?
Yeah, I know we've got just a little tiny bit more time left. So I was just going to comment on what Charles was just talking about with Enterprise and stuff. And I actually think, Charles, you're right. And I would argue that it actually started showing up in DS9. You know, I think that DS9 actually started as an entirely different kind of series. And I think they knew – well, we learned from the documentary that they didn't necessarily know that they were going to take it to a war, you know, later on in the series. But that they definitely – had this intent that it would have a little bit of an edgier feel to it. And I do think that's a reflection of the time in which it was made. And as a result, I actually just wanted to mention that I think that Voyager kind of offsets that a little bit, because although there was some dark stuff in Voyager, you know, things like the Equinox episode come to mind. Like, that's one of the scariest episodes, I think, of Star Trek ever. There was a lot of hope that came out of Star Trek Voyager. And yeah. It was almost like DS9 was the reality 2x4 smacking you across the face, and Voyager was the hope that would get you through that situation and propel you kind of to the future.
Well, exactly. I don't want to, I don't want to get into, we don't have a lot of time, and I don't want to turn Comic Corner into Trek talking, but I do want to throw this out there so you guys have something to chomp on, and so that you guys tune in on Thursday night so you have an idea of the kind of things we're going to be talking about. But if you look at what we see in the Picard trailer and what we see going on in Discovery, have you guys noticed that all of the – let me look for the right word – all of the core characters, all the central figures that we identify with Star Trek are on the outs. Either they're not seen at all, or they're on the outside of the Federation. Have you noticed that? Picard's not there. Janeway, we haven't heard. We don't know where she is. Seven of Nine is on the outside. Riker and Troy are not on the Titan. They're on the outside. Data, well, we don't know exactly what's with Data, but he's not a Starfleet officer anymore. Have you noticed that the people that we look at for our ethical and moral compasses aren't there, and the people that we do see in charge are just the opposite of what we would look at for moral and ethical compasses as far as Star Trek goes? And I mean, I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't think that they're doing that accidentally. And I think that whatever happened after Nemesis, which we don't know, but if you remember Nemesis, Picard was at odds with the Admirals and Nemesis for going against Federation rules and ethical values. He was fighting with them even in Nemesis. So the Federation, as we know it, has been turning away from what we consider to be Starfleet values towards something else. And I think that isolating us from Janeway, we don't see her, and putting Seven of Nine on the outside saying, I fight for those who can't fight for themselves, and Picard, everything that's going on, I think that we're seeing the eventual decline of the Federation leading into Discovery Season 3. And it's just my opinion.
I think you're right, Jim, and I think the issue that some fans are going to have with this is that fundamentally when you look at original Gene Roddenberry 1960s science fiction, there was an element of connecting the Federation either directly or indirectly to the United States as a political entity, and kind of the notion that was the right way to go, or the moral way to go, or that type of thing. And I think that all this talk that we've been doing about Star Trek reflecting what's going on in the real world holds true even now. And I think that's why we're seeing that in Picard and Discovery, because no longer is the sort of political establishment the trusted entity to which you necessarily always look back and, you know, rise to that level of morality. I think what we're seeing now is Star Trek starting to explore ideas that people have their own morality within themselves, and that it's that morality that they must rise to, and not necessarily that of some political or, you know, cultural entity.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. I mean, you have two choices. You either stand up and do something, or you sit down and do nothing. And sitting down and doing nothing is the same thing as supporting what it is that you should stand up and do something about. And I think
you could argue that that's a political statement, but I think that that's not the way that it's actually being told. I think it's actually being told as a human story, as like a story of of hope and promise. And, you know, really all you got to do is look within yourself and you have the power to make these things happen. That's why I think even though there's darkness to Star Trek Discovery, there's a lot of hope too. And I think that even if people aren't seeing it the first time they watch this series, they're going to see it after multiple viewings eventually.
And I think you're right. I think that it's very easy to politicize everything because I think that's what our world does today. Everything is right versus left. Everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what, you know. Well, you know, I don't like pineapple on my pizza. Well, that's because you're one of those liberals or whatever. today's world likes to label people and put them in a compartment where they're nice and neatly labeled. And that's just where we are right now in this point in time. And I think that Star Trek says, you know what? It doesn't matter. You know what's right. You know what's wrong. You know what's ethical. You know what's moral. It's up to you to do something about it. And I think that's the message that Star Trek sends us, because we don't see politics in Star Trek. I've never heard, well, a politics in Star Trek, I think you touched on it. It's always the admirals. They're always the side of the bad guy.
Well,
you know?
And there's like, DS9 had a fair bit of politics and stuff, but the underlying current is not that politics control things. The underlying current of Star Trek is that it's actually the human interactions, the human relationships that rule the morality of every situation. It never has to do with, oh, because Starfleet says so or because the prophets say so. It always goes back to human morality.
And this and so much more we're going to talk about on Thursday. I just wanted to wet your whistle and get your brain cranking, get you thinking. We've been mushy for a while, but now we got a lot to talk about. We're going to dive right in and break it all down and just
no more mush.
Yeah, the mush is gone, and now it's time to get real. And we're going to do that Thursday night on Trek Talk at 7:30, same bat time, same bat channel. Number is the same, 646-668-2433. We would love to hear from you. And I've had a really good time talking about comic books here on the Star Trek edition of Comic Corner presented by Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York. I look forward to what we're going to be looking at it'll be the 11th. Yeah. We're going to wait a week, and that way we'll have three books, but we're going to still do the full hour and a half. So that's good. We'll do a half an hour for each book. So you guys have something to look forward to, but it will be on the 11th. It'll be the second Monday, which is Veterans Day. And I want to say thank you to Jamie for hanging out and chatting Star Trek with the old man. Thanks, Jamie.
Live long and prosper.
And, of course, I got to say thank you to Charles for hanging out and chatting with us about Star Trek comic books. Thank you, Charles.
Oh, thanks as always.
And, of course, we have to say thank you to Eric, who mentioned something. You know, I'm getting old and senile like I am. I forget a lot of things. And I was chatting with Eric earlier, and Eric mentioned something to me that just caught me off guard. And that is that Eric's about to celebrate a special anniversary here on Trek Talking. And it just seems to me like that can't be right, but apparently it is. What are you about to celebrate, Eric?
Well, coming up at the beginning of January, it will be 2 years that I've been on the podcast.
Can you believe that?
Believe
wow.
it or not.
I know. It's hard to believe. You know,
time
it's like if
it.
You hear me, you hear me talking to Ken, and it's like Ken's just always been there, but in reality, he hasn't. But, it just seems like you guys have always been there, but you haven't. So I think that's pretty cool. And, of course, we couldn't do... what about you?
The fact, I think I'm probably passing right around my third year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you've been here the longest. Well, Jamie's been here the longest, but I think...
Yeah. Well, Chris was before I was.
It's true.
Yeah. And, of course, we can't do Comic Corner without the comic guru himself, TJ the Shopkeeper from Freakopolis Geekery. Thank you for hanging out with us and doing a little Comic Corner, TJ.
Thank you for having me. I always love coming on and talking comics. I miss doing the Thursday show, but this lets me really talk about some stuff I really love. So thanks.
So before we wrap it up, TJ, what's going on around Freakopolis Geekery?
We've got a week packed full of events. We got some awesome new product coming in on Wednesday with a HeroClix event. We got Thursday night D&D. We got Friday night open board game night. Saturday afternoon D&D. And then the return of Star Trek Attack Wing on Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. hosted by us, but GM'd or organized by Uncle Jim of Trek Talking. So glad to be having that. We'll be doing that every other Sunday, right?
Yep, every other Sunday. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a wormhole. Well, we'll have two. We're going to have two tables. There's going to be Deep Space Nine on one and Tarek Nor on the other, and there'll be a wormhole that you have to go through to get from table to table. We're going to have two armies, and the objective is to capture the other space station. So that's what we're going to do. And it's all TOS and Enterprise-era ships. So there's something to think about. And we're just going to have some fun. So that's going to be on Sunday. So if you're in the area, stop by and check it out. We're going to have a lot of fun. We always do. We have a good group of Attack Wing players. And speaking of Attack Wing, Jamie and I just finished recording our audio bites for the animated series review that Eric wrote up for us. I'm currently working on some information on the animated series, like, because I like, that's how I like to do the videos. If you guys have seen any of our Attack Wing videos, so I'll give you a little bit of history about the animated series, and then I have to sit down and put it all together, you know, get some music in it, and we'll get that out there for you guys. I think you're really gonna like it. It's been over a year since we've had any new content for Attack Wing, so I want this one to be just right, and I think you're gonna like it. We'll get that posted on our YouTube channel. We'll get that on our Facebook page, and we'll get that over on board game. We'll get it everywhere. So you want to keep an eye out for that. And Eric is also working on the Borg Fleet pack as well. So
yeah, and if you guys haven't seen the videos before, it's not just us, sitting and reading the cards. We actually try to give you a little bit of analysis about each card that's available. Just interesting ways that we can see it being used in fleets, or ways that it synergizes with other cards in the pack. So it's worth watching the videos. It's not just us sitting there reading the cards. It's actually some cool, like, you know, pseudo strategic content in there.
And I do want to say something as well. When Eric sends us the script, me and Jamie will divide them up. Jamie will do a couple and I'll do a couple and whatnot. But the one thing I like, a lot, if you look at a lot of other videos, people will start talking about things. And if you don't know, if you don't have that ship or that pack, you don't know what they're talking about. But when Eric writes up the script, particularly for the TAS one, he's only referencing and talking about cards that are in that pack. He's not, you know, he's not saying, oh, well, the such and such a card that came in the such and such a pack would work great for this. And you're like, what pack, what card, what are you talking about? I never saw that. So you're not going to feel left out or lost. If you have the animated series fleet pack and you watch this video, you'll be right at home, because everything that Eric talks about in the script is all out of that box, with a few exceptions. But 99% of what we talk about, you'll have in your hands, and you actually will be able to sit down at the table and try those out for yourself, which I think is great. So keep an eye out for that. Now that camp is closed, I have a little bit more time. I'm going to try to work on that and get that out to you guys very, very, very soon. So, that lady's telling us we got 90 seconds to go. So listen, I had a great time talking about Star Trek comics and Comic Book Corner, the Star Trek edition presented by Freakopolis Geekery. Thank you very much to each and every one of my Trek-sperts. You guys will all be back Thursday night for Trek Talking, when we're going to delve into Star Trek Picard, Star Trek Discovery Season 3, and we're going to fully review the new Short Trek Q&A with Spock and number one, Stuck in a Turbo Lift. Anyways, 60 seconds, so I got to say goodnight to everybody. she's yelling at me here. So I had a lot of fun, and I want another shout out to David. Thanks for listening, David. Thanks to each and every one of you listening to this. Make sure you tune in Thursday night for Trek Talking. And as I always say on every show, Star Trek fans are the best fans. You better believe it. Be good to each other. And we'll talk to you guys on the 11th for the very next Comic Corner. And we'll talk to you Thursday night for Trek Talking. And one more thing, Stunt Treks is moving to Sunday at 7. from Tuesday. So the next Stunt Trek will be on Sunday the 13th with D. Leslie Hoffman and Uncle Jim. So check that out on Sunday at 7 o'clock. I'll do the Star Trek Attack Wing game at Freakopolis, and then I get to run home and do a podcast. So thanks a lot, guys. We'll see you all on Thursday. We'll catch you on the 11th for the next Comic Corner. Be good to each other. Kapla!
Live long and prosper.
Night, y'all.
Good night, guys.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.